speak much shorter, I hope. Okay, a big schluss again. Sponsor of the Shmooze is a guy, Alan Pinter. Alan was my chavrusa. He sat at my table the first summer. And we've been... So you know who's Alan Pinter? Nobody? So sad. You do? Yeah? Oh, I thought you were raising your hand. Alan Pinter. I would guess Andrew would know. Yeah, he's an old school Morisha guy. Okay, so let's say he built Morisha. He built Morisha back in the day. Alan was a chasher Talmud, and like all the guys from the original Kobe squad that you wouldn't expect. And I'm not saying this is the way to go. I'm not saying it's not the way to go. I'm just saying I'm sharing with you information. And you know, from that Kobe squad, Alan was there, and he was a big tzaddik always. And then I attribute a lot of these things to that summer in Najua. Next thing you know, he just finished his second year in the Mir. Nothing makes sense. Nothing makes sense. And almost nothing makes sense. He's doing amazing. Married, doing amazing. So, okay, he's still connected to us. I'm very, very proud to be able to say that. So I just want to talk about one small thing. It's a big thing, but we'll speak about it in small amount of time. So after Moshe Rabbeinu is introducing, telling what we started last night, Acharei Yakoso, Sichon, Melech Amori, Chazring, the story of until they got to where they were in the Midbar. And then he says, Be'ivar Yardin Beretz Moav, Hoil Moshe Be'er Es HaTorah Hazos. Lemor. Moshe Be'er Es HaTorah Hazos. Moshe Be'er, he explained? Moshe explained the Torah. And there's a pasuk here, it's a pasuk later in Dvarim also, use a little bit of a different language. And Rashi says, that it means Be'er is a Torah, says Rashi from the Medrash. The Gemara talks about it in Sota. B'shivim Lashon Pershalahem. He explained the Torah in 70 languages to Klal Yisrael. So they're standing. You picture the scene. They're standing right before they're about to cross the Yarden into Eretz Yisrael. And this happened multiple times. The Gemara in Sota explains that they transcribed on stones. If you never heard the story, it's an incredible story. So they transcribed on stones before they crossed the Yarden. They wrote the Torah on stones in 70 different languages. When in mid-Yarden, mid-crossing, again, this is, I feel like a lot of Jews don't know this, but there were two Kriyas Yamsevs. One was Kriyas Yamsev, and the other one was when they crossed the Yarden to come into Eretz Yisrael, the Yarden had a full Kriyas Yamsev. So when the Yarden split, the Kohanim over there, is it third Kriyas Yamsev? Maybe I'm crazy. I would be more likely to say I'm crazy. Okay. But that's not a Klal Yisrael. Okay, yeah. Yeah, Hashem split a lot of waters. But for Klal Yisrael, for the travels in the Midbar, so there was the Yam Suf and then there was the Yarden. So when he split the Yarden, mid Yarden, they also set up these stones, and then they took them apart. When they got into Eretz Yisrael, they set these stones up again. So these stones, I would love to find this if somebody could do a little archaeological digging. And these stones have transcribed on them the whole Torah in 70 languages. There are Mepharshim who say it's impossible and it must be some kind of shorthand or maybe the Taryag Mitzvahs or I don't know. There's a lot of different Mepharshim over here explaining what they transcribed exactly. But simple pshat is they transcribed the entirety of Torah in 70 languages. And Moshe, he went out of his way when he was talking to Klal Yisrael to not just tell them Bereishis Bara Elokim v'Shamayim v'Haaretz in Hebrew, in Lashon Kodesh, but he told them Bereishis Bara Elokim v'Shamayim v'Haaretz in Russian, in Latin, in Chinese. It's a very funny scene because you have all the Jews, and I'm assuming they understood it was the second generation of Klal Yisrael about to enter Eretz Yisrael. So I'm assuming maybe like in the house they spoke Egyptian from their parents, grandparents. Maybe they understood that language. Mistama, they knew Lashon Kodesh because that was the language that they were speaking in the Midbar. So Egyptian and Lashon Kodesh, I understand. But why is Moshe telling them the Torah in Russian? Why is Moshe telling them the Torah in Latin and Spanish? It's a very, very, Mistama is a very cool picture to think about. You know, Moshe standing up there, and even if I tried to, you know, make a good joke and say over Bereishis Bara Elokim in Spanish, I wouldn't be able to. I don't know. I don't know any words to make the joke with, but just to envision, you know, I don't know. If he was talking the language, he got into the culture a little bit. You know, it's the Olympics now. So he waved the Russian flag when he said it in Russian. He waved the Spanish flag when he said it in Spanish. It's a very, very cool thing to think of. But the bottom line is you have to ask yourself, for what? For what purpose? What purpose did it need to be transcribed in all the languages? And for what purpose did Moshe need to, it sounds like he was verbally transmitting the Torah in all the languages. Not only that, the Gemara in Sota also adds, as Machlokas Tanoim, how it was written. So the simple pshat, what you would have thought is that they smeared on the stones plaster, and on top of the plaster, they wrote the Torah. But there's a second opinion over there, that they wrote the Torah, and then on top of the Torah, they covered it with plaster. So there's an opinion, a feeling in the Gemara, that you couldn't even read it. It was covered up. So what is this? You write the Torah, you cover it up, different languages, nobody spoke. What's the purpose in this? So we're going to talk, hopefully short, and I'm just going to say one idea that I think is worthy of conversation. So the simple shot is to understand for the future. Hashem knew that Klal Yisrael is going to go into a lot of different areas of Golus. So to be makdim, to preempt an introduction of sorts. That when you go to Russia, this is the Torah in Russian. When you go to America, this is the Torah in American. When you end up in Kobe, Japan, this is the Torah in Japanese. Okay, Kavi Pshat. The second Pshat, which sounds much more reasonable, because if you learn the Gemara over there, the Gemara seems to indicate that this is the case, that Hashem was transmitting it in all the languages for the Goyim. Because the Gemara discusses that the Goyim would go and they would peer at these stones. And they would read it, and they would take notes, and they would bring it back to their origin countries, and they would discuss it. And so the Torah was written in all languages, is Torah Shebichsav, and so that the Goyim would have access to it. Tosus over there asks the Kasha that Hashem offered them the Torah ready, and they said no. So what are you giving it to them again? Okay, so Tosus has a Kasha like that, but that's the second shot. Second shot is that it seems like, and that shot seems accurate, there's truth to that. That Hashem wanted to give the Torah, give access to the Torah to all the. But then you have Akasha with the Septuagint, when they put all the Zakenim into different rooms, they asked them to transmit the Torah, to translate the Torah, and it was a big tumult over there. They already had it, and okay, a lot of Akashas, but Lamai said that there's a true pshat like that. I want to say a third pshat, especially Lefida Mandomer, that it was covered up. And also we never answered the kasha of why he needed to, it sounds like he needed to verbally tell the Jews in Russian and Spanish. And so what's the necessity for this? So I'm going to say something that sounds very generic, and I don't understand the generic pshat in what I'm about to say. So I want to explain it in a less generic fashion. So the generic pshat is that we've all heard these types of phrases, is that Hashem wants to infuse the Torah in all of humanity. Okay, you heard such a pshat. We've all heard such pshatim before. So humanity is contained in culture and language. If you do a little bit of you put thought into it, you'll come to realize that humanity, people, can be really summed up within language and culture, and culture could really be summed up in language. So when you're trying to define and put the world, put people into boxes, ultimately what you'll come to is language, and language. Not for now, but we could talk about this a different time. Language encapsulates the entirety of culture. If you speak Spanish, you'll really understand the Spanish culture because there are phrases and words in different languages that don't exist in other languages. And that's indicative of the culture. It's indicative of the people. One easy example that a lot of Rebbeim like to say is that there's no word in Lashon Kodesh for fun. It doesn't exist. There's no word for it. So that's indicative of what Lashon Kodesh is supposed to be. It's indicative of our people, of Klal Yisrael. And you look at the English language, there's a million words for fun. They love this kind of stuff. You know, fun, thrill, exciting. Geschmack, that's already an English word too. But in Lashon Kodesh, there's no word. And the Rambam says a famous thing. The Rambam famously says that there are no curse words in Lashon Kodesh. And curse words are only two categories. It means intimate relations, and it means excrement, things, waste that comes out of your body. All curse words are, this is the Rambam, it's not my chiddush, and you go through in your head every curse word you ever heard, and they all fit into two categories. It's either intimate stuff, or it's what comes out of the body. All curse words fit in this, those. And in Lashon Kodesh, there's no such words. We use euphemisms to refer to those topics, those concepts. But there's no actual words for those concepts. It doesn't exist. Why? Because Lashon Kodesh. That's why the Rambam says it's called Lashon Kodesh. Because the Lashon is Kodesh. And if the Lashon is Kodesh, the people are Kodesh. It says about the people. So Hashem wants to infuse, I picture, I guess, like Epcot Center. When you go through Epcot Center, I don't know the last time you've been there, but Epcot Center is, you go to Canada, it's like, again, now the Olympics, it's in Yanni Dioma. So Epcot Center, you visit Canada, and they have, I don't know, I guess, ice hockey. And then you visit Mexico, and they have sombreros, and you visit Russia. I really have no idea what these places have. Communism, whatever. Okay, so it's you visit all the different places, and Epcot Center, so you get, and then they sell food, the different types of cuisines of the different. This is like an Epcot Center, Kanish Dickel. Hashem wants to give the Torah in all languages. He wants to infuse Torah everywhere in humanity. You've heard such a var before. I'm not saying anything new, but I want to explain it in maybe hopefully a new way. So let's talk now practical for a second. So I find in yeshiva, I talk a lot. I know what I talk a lot about. And one of the things I talk a lot about, for sure I think a lot about, is ambition. I know I talk a lot about that. Ambition is something I really think about a lot. I talk about it. I invest a lot in understanding what makes people ambitious and what makes people unambitious. I put a lot of thought into that. And what I came to realize at some point in my life was that it's hard. It's not a precise science to compare ambition in the Beis Medrash, in yeshiva, and ambition outside of yeshiva. Some people, I think, make a false estimate that if you're not ambitious in yeshiva, that will carry over into your work, profession, career, family, whatever. And I think it's a mistake. I think it's a false estimation. I don't think these two are comparable, and I want to share with you why I think they're different. But what I see is that sometimes I find a person who's, and often it only goes in one direction. I want to clarify that. It doesn't go in both directions. A person who's ambitious in the world, usually, if you throw him in a Beis Medrash, he's going to develop ambition if he has it already. If he has it already, you put him in a Beis Medrash, that ambition does, I've seen that more often than not, carry over into a Beis Medrash environment. But when dealing with kids, you know, younger people who haven't developed that ambition outside the Beis Medrash, I've seen plenty of kids not ambitious in the Beis Medrash, and then when they leave and they go into the world, they do have ambition. And I want to suggest why. Ambition in the world is, like you know, very tangible. It's what we mentioned last night, that you have a job, you make money. There's clear short-term incentives and clear short-term benefits. So when you're ambitious in the world, you see, even if you're in college, you could go to med school. Med school is a 10-year plan. But over the course of the 10-year plan, you see you're getting closer to a salary, to a job, to a exciting career. You see things are moving in that direction. So even if you can't taste it yet, you for sure could smell it. It's a little in the distance, but you have it. And when you put a younger person in the Beis Medrash, what are we chasing? This has to be defined. What exactly are we chasing? So the best definition I have that I've come to is that we're chasing on an individual level, but bigger than just individual, on a societal level, we're chasing an interest to become supernatural. Now, I know a lot of you might not agree with that, because it's not true. No, what do you mean supernatural? We're chasing, now we're learning about tzitzis, that's tangible. We're learning about tefillin, that's tangible. But who are we kidding? Who are we kidding? Let's talk straight. Somebody understands tefillin? No. Somebody understands tzitzis? No. We're going to understand how we try to understand. How to build tzitzis. How to build tefillin. That's what we learn about. How. The how is what we learn, is what we focus on. But the true understanding of what is tefillin and why is tefillin, we could say kupshatim. We could always say kupshatim, and a lot of them are true. But ultimately, why is tefillin? Why is tzitzis? There's always going to be one answer. And the only answer is, this is a supernatural, we are a supernatural people. We are not a physical people. We are a people that lives above physicality, above the world. That's just who we are. That's what Torah is. And so when you put a person in a base medrash and he struggles, I don't think it's crazy to suggest that some people are not yet of the maturity. It takes incredible maturity, incredible maturity to chase supernatural. That's not normal. We don't live like that. To live a fully physical existence and to chase supernatural, that's very not normal. It's a very uncommon, irrational way to live. That you're living in a fully functional physical world and you're constantly focused and thinking about being supernatural and developing the supernatural and you're investing in the supernatural. Who does that? Very mature people. Extremely, extremely sophisticated people. And so it doesn't surprise me, and you take an 18, 19, 20-year-old guy, and in the base medrash, he's tired, can't do it, a little lazy, cuts corners, comes late, leaves early, and then you put him in the workforce, and he's amazing. He's on time, he clocks in, he clocks out, he does it as it should be done, but in the base medrash, how come he can't do that? And my understanding is, because we're chasing something that's far, far from tangible, and not only are we chasing something far from tangible, we're chasing something that is beyond our physical reach. So we talk about emuna and bitachon. It's a constant subconscious existence of emuna and bitachon to believe that this has value. To believe that what we're doing has value takes a tremendous amount of emuna and bitachon. I had the most beautiful, I said it when I was talking to the kids today at the Earth site, and I don't know if you were listening, but I want to repeat what I said. So I said there was a very nice lady there. I thought she was taking pictures. I wasn't sure exactly what her role was in camp, but she was watching us. I saw her watching us. And then she came over to me at the end of us learning with the campers. Again, if I said it, but I'll repeat it if you didn't hear. And she says to me, what's happening here? Who are you people? You know? And I said, she knew, obviously it's a new thing in camp, in Marasha, Kobe. She said, I know these kids. She said she was working in the camp 4 years, and I saw these kids grow up the last 4 years. She goes, this is known. This is the least motivated division. These kids are all too cool for school, and they're all, you know, nobody wants to learn over here. They just want to have a great time, play sports, do all these kinds of geschmack stuff over here. And you have a division of 70 kids right now, fully engaged in learning in Caruses. She says, what is happening here? She goes, she said, this is the most beautiful thing I've seen. She started, she was telling me, she started on the mom's chat. She was like going off on the mom's chat. Everybody's got to come down and see what's happening. And she was soundly sending pictures and all these kinds of texts to everybody. She said, you're not going to believe what's happening over here. And I thought to myself that if you try to portray what we're doing here, essentially you can, if you come at the Tish or at the Suda Friday night, you could say, oh, they hired like a bunch of energetic, hype young guys, like dancers, and they come into the dining room and they do a whole choreography matzav and they get everybody to dance, and it's just a very hype crew, energetic, young, vibrant, cool guys. They bring them in, they bring the, you know, geschmack, the camp, come to the Tish, another geschmack, and everybody's having a good time. That's not true. That's not what's happening here. If you have a good sense of smell, what you'll notice what's happening here is that your presence is reminding people of who they are. That's what's happening. Because every Jew has this supernatural essence within him, and often it doesn't go tapped into. So you have neshamas walking around that are less tapped into than some of you are. You've spent more time developing that part of yourself. And then when you walk, you just have to walk around. And when you walk around, the presence itself, some people are a little bit frustrated. Kid doesn't show up for chinuch and I want to make an impact. I try to learn and he's not interested. I try to explain and he spaces out. Don't worry. I learned with a kid the other day. I got to tell you, it was one of the most eye-opening experiences for me, a reminder. I sat and I learned with the kid. It was Mishnah, I think. I sat and learned with the kid. So we read a Mishnah and I said to him, I'll read the Hebrew and you'll read the English. And I read the Hebrew and he read the English and I started to explain and he spaced out. Okay, I'll try again. I read the Hebrew, he read the English, I started to explain, spaced out. And then I saw all he wants to do is read the English. He didn't understand a word of what he was reading, not a word. I said, can you summarize it for me? He's like, no, I don't fully understand it. I said, you want to talk about it? He goes, no, let's just keep reading. His understanding was, let's read. I said, okay, you're my Rebbe, let's do it. So we finished a handful of Mishnahs, we finished a bunch of Mishnahs, and he said, that was the best learning I ever did. That was so much fun. And I'm looking at him, stupefied. Did we just do anything? I was really it was really a shock for me. I thought I didn't do anything just now, but he told me that was incredible. He said, I just had such a spiritual high. That was an incredible spiritual high. What did he read? I don't want to say publicly what he read. I'll tell you privately later. Something, we learned Mishnahs by accident, the wrong Mishnahs we shouldn't have been learning. And he just read words. He read words. And he, I assure you, he didn't understand what he was reading. And I surely was not going to try to explain it to him. And he felt uplifted. Why? Because there's a transcendent nature to Torah. Torah facilitates somehow, some way, in Shivim Lashon, in all 70 languages, it communicates with all of humanity. The spreading of Torah is capable of communicating with all of humanity, even when you can't read it. Even when it's absolutely illegible. And you can't make out the understanding of the words. There's a minhag, I think, by some cultures that they read Zohar. I don't want to say who, because I don't know if it's accurate, but it's accurate that some cultures in Klal Yisrael they don't attempt to understand, but they have a minhag. They every day they read a certain amount of Zohar. They don't understand the words, but they read it. Why? There's something going on. There's a transcendent nature of the existence. Happens to be the letters of the Aleph Beis. These 22 letters shaped and reshaped in different forms, has a transcendent capability to touch on all of our essence, and not just, don't get on our high horse and assume it's just Asher Bachar Bono Mikol Amin. It's for sure Kol Shekin Kal V'Chomer for us, but Afilu for the Russians and the Spanish and our good Mexican friends right here on campus. There's a transcendent nature that reminds a person of his end essence and his supernatural existence. And that for Hashem to expose at the entrance to Eretz Yisrael, when you land at Ben Gurion Airport. So what you see today is you see there's a water fountain up in the middle over there, a couple coffee stations, a duty free shop. You see they sell fancy watches at airports for some odd reason. And that's what you see. That's a big mistake. This is Ben Gurion Airport, the Torah is talking about. At Ben Gurion Airport, what's supposed to be? These stones that transcribe and express to the world, you've just landed in a place that transcends supernatural existence. Welcome to this country, that there's no physicality here. You might make a mistake and think that you see physical people and physical food. Lo sasuru acharei enechem. Don't let your eyes lead you astray and misinform you. What appears is not what is. It appears that you're in a physical area. There's nothing physical about this area. And Hashem is telling us, I'll try to end on time. Hashem is telling us that I'm expressing this language, this communicative exercise, this lashon, to say lashon is belittling it. This, Hashem saying, I want to fill the world with this. I want to infuse all of existence with this, with the words, and it's not just words, but we call it words of Torah. And I want this to touch on every corner of humanity. So slowly but surely, as it trickles in, as it inches through all four corners of the world, this will create an uplifting of every individual and every language and every culture. And I don't even know why I chose to talk about this tonight, but all that's going through my mind as I'm speaking is the flags in the dining room. And it's it's not by accident, like I always notice, it's not by accident that by accident is what's going on here, because this is what's happening here. What's happening is Hashem is trying to express His will and send His will throughout all of humanity. And I want to just be machazik us, just to say one word of chizik to us, that you don't realize, we don't realize, we do not appreciate the ambition we have, the ambition you have in the base medrash is supernatural. Absolutely supernatural that a person has ambition to learn a 3-hour Seder about something that he can't fully fathom shows what kind of supernatural person he is. And when a person is inching toward that, slowly inching toward that, encourage him and believe in him and support him, because it takes time and it's not an easy task to get to this level of maturity and sophistication. But it is certainly the level of sophistication that Hashem desires deeply from each one of His people. Each one of His people He tasks and hopes and yearns that they should reach this point, that they think and only think about getting to this level of transcending the physical and lifting up everything that they are and everything around them to what the world should be. And Mirz Hashem, day by day, Seder by Seder, week by week, Shabbos by Shabbos, you see it. You see it. The chizik I got from this woman, I'm remembering her name now, Mrs. Neowitz. Mrs. Neowitz, this amazing lady, you know her? Such a nice lady, such an amazing lady. And she saw what I took for granted. She reminded me what I started taking for granted, that, oh, it's a Seder, we're learning, Shkayach. She said, this is not normal. This is not normal. What you guys are doing, this is not normal. And I said to myself, Mrs. Neowitz, I should invite more women to come speak in the Beis Medrash. She really nailed it. She nailed it. This is not normal. This is super normal. And we're living a super normal existence. And chizuk, because you forget. Chizuk, you forget. Don't forget. Be strengthened. Know this and continue with this path. Shkayach.
Okay, we'll learn.